I'm Beth Hover, a member of the board for Our Community Cares volunteer organization, and you're in tune to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Acre.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the Office of the Governor and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the Greene County Cultural Fund, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC monthly supporters, whose generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Russell Miller in New York, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Dell Newscast, July the 9th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. 20 years after Massachusetts became the first state to permit marriage equality, a majority of same-sex married couples say it had a profound positive impact on their lives.
A new report finds it strengthened couples' relationships, provided legal protections, financial security, and greater acceptance among family and friends. Clark University psychology professor Dr. Abby Goldberg says marriage equality is part of a public health agenda.
They have access to health insurance. They are physically and mentally healthier. They're able to share the challenges and work of raising children.
Still, Goldberg says nearly 80% of couples surveyed worry about the future of marriage equality. Supreme Court Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas have both suggested the High Court revisit Obergefell v. Hodges, the decision that legalized same-sex marriage in 2015. I'm Catherine Carley reporting.
Almost 60% of participants said marriage provided more stability or security for their kids and often created new in-laws who could help. Meantime, Tropical Storm Beryl slammed into Texas Monday, knocking out power to nearly 3 million homes and businesses and unleashing heavy rains that prompted dozens of high water rescues. The AP reports the fast-moving storm threatened to carve a harsh path over several more states in coming days. Texas state and local officials warned it could take several days to restore power after Beryl came ashore as a Category 1 and toppled 10 transmission lines and knocked down trees that took down power lines. Beryl has weakened into a tropical storm, but the AP notes the winds and the rains of the fast-moving storm were still powerful enough to knock down hundreds of trees that had already been teetering in water-saturated earth. Next to Arkansas, where construction is underway on a new housing community in southwest Little Rock that will help people who are experiencing chronic homelessness get off the streets. We get more in this Little Rock Public Radio, Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation, Arkansas News Service collaboration.
Providence Park will include up to 400 so-called tiny homes, plus services to help people who are unhoused. Founder and CEO Aaron Stanger says the project will provide people with shelter and wraparound services.
medical, dental, and mental care, but then also just a wonderful community for them to feel safe and loved. And again, yeah, really focusing on dignity. And it's just a whole community designed to empower them.
One in every three households in Arkansas can be considered ALICE, which stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed, as defined by the nonprofit Alliance United Way. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
This is Public News Service. We head next to Pennsylvania, where the landscape is being transformed through billions of dollars in federal funding from the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law. More now from our Daniel Smith.
Senator Bob Casey emphasizes the multifaceted benefits Pennsylvania has reaped from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. He points to record-breaking investments in roads, bridges, water systems, and transportation across the state. Casey points out that $13 billion was allocated to Pennsylvania for roads and bridges.
For example, in Pittsburgh, raising the flood wall that protects the Parkway East in downtown Pittsburgh, including the so-called bathtub section of I-376 that often floods during heavy storms. That's a $6.6 million project that will help ensure that it can stay open and allow for traffic to flow through.
According to Casey's website, progress has been made on key provisions in the Senate's initial fiscal year 2024 funding bills.
Meantime, AARP has scheduled four projects in Idaho to receive $49,000 in grants. Eric Tegenhoff reports the projects chosen by the organization's annual Community Challenge grant program.
The program is designed to support proposals that make cities more livable for people of all ages, especially those age 50 and older, and can be built quickly. Marie Bonomino with AARP Idaho says the program selected three projects in the state this year that will boost rural communities.
A couple of the grants are things that will bring people outdoors, that will keep them active, and also to help some of the things that have fallen apart, to be honest, in some of these areas, because they just don't have the dollars to keep things maybe fixed up and in good condition.
Projects in the cities of Cascade, Marsing, and Salmon will improve outdoor areas to encourage social gathering, especially among older Idahoans.
This year, AARP is investing $3.8 million in more than 340 projects across the nation. Since 2017, it's awarded 30 grants in Idaho worth nearly $330,000 total. Finally, from our Shantia Hudson, factory farming can have detrimental effects on the environment, health, and the farmers who run them.
In North Carolina and beyond, one organization is working to support farmers caught in the exploitative cycle of contract farming and to improve the food system. Paula Bowles and her husband had the idea to start a poultry farm on their family land for retirement, but their hopes were shattered soon after signing the contract.
And we realized there's a lot of debt up front, but they actually give you like this 10-year scenario where you can pay it off in like 10 years.
She says even more debt was tacked on in the form of upgrades.
This is by Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our content and trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, July 9th. If for some reason you hear a buzzing in the background, that is the air conditioner. I'm going to try to filter it out, but it goes off for no one. Local early morning temperatures range from 64 degrees in Medusa to 75 already in Skodak. Air quality will be moderate. Blame that on the humidity. It is going to be bad the next couple of days, as a warm front combines with what's left of Beryl to make it rainy and just gross. The rain comes rolling in from the southwest, hitting hardest this afternoon, though it is all expected to be light. A high of 94 happens at 4 p.m. Make sure everybody has lots of water on hand. If you are in an area prone to blackouts, there are options to protect yourself, from battery-powered fans you can buy at any big box store to a range of generators. Do what you can to protect yourselves. The air is going to be thick, kind of like a stew that's trying to cook you. Okay, back on track. 72 will be the low just after sunup, and then the bitter, angry remnants of Beryl hit home on Wednesday. Rain and thunder is expected, especially in the afternoon. Local downpours could be expected. Flash flooding of creeks could occur. Remember that if you're trying to fish or swim. A high of 82 happens at 2 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 72 degrees. And it will feel nasty with the dew point trailing closely. Thursday, light rain all day, high of 84 at 4 p.m. Friday, still raining, high of 83. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:04 a.m., high tide at 5:57 a.m., low tide again at 12:47 p.m., and high tide once again at 6:45 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 69 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:19 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:25 a.m. Looking way up, we see space, at least the local planetary neighborhood, is pretty quiet. No Hadouken expected, X-class flare chances at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 388 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently maybe okay below 8 megahertz, and that's only overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 90. And this has been The Better Weather for Tuesday, July 9th, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Let's begin.
You have 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Don't worry if you can't follow everything that is said. Now repeat.
Universal presents
JamCon 84.
I'd say my comment would be it's not very funny. You can do better than that.
You see, I think it's the subject matter. We're getting into some stuff that's a little deeper than certain people can comprehend.
And it sounds peculiar, right?
Jamming.
Several instances, valuable broadcast licenses have been turned over to strike applicants for no more reason, it would seem,
jamming,
than they were able to promise more than the existing broadcaster had been able to deliver.
You're a real idiot.
At last, you admit it. You know, it is kind of fun, isn't it? Yeah, a lot of fun. See you squirm and yell. I can't copy you and, you know, wiggle around.
By God.
And that, you know, it's a lot of fun listening to you squirm and squawk when I jam you.
Okay, Paul, I guess I have my tape recorder now.
Well, fine. I don't care. I'm the biggest liar in the Met. I'm only joking. It's fun.
But after these people died, the jamming really started to lose purpose.
The end will take care of itself.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the worst programming I've heard on KPSA ever.
I can't comment.
From all operators in the Bay Area.
Your mind is
on the jamming.
Don't hear this.
Stupid question.
How would you like to? Are you
everything's all missed? Here, now you can go.
Are you a caller?
Yes.
You.
Well, I'm objecting to the fact that what you're doing is mind jamming.
Public amateur radio.
I think that caller understands.
And
that's of course.
So good luck trying.
What you're doing is mind jamming.
Is that bad?
You're gonna continue to have these jamming problems unless you just open your doors to everybody.
And
let's see what the guys have to say here on the radio.
I got him.
What do you think about that caller we just had, IWH?
I think she's in a jam. I don't think.
Music from the hearts of space.
I love music from the hearts of space.
So do I. I listen to it every week. It's one of the greatest programs around, but I also this, too.
Well, but it's not like 6, 7, or 8 channels coming in at one time. And like I said, when you first wake up...
Wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
I want everybody to know about KE6MJ.
Yeah? Okay, that's good to know.
I owe you an
let's get the other call. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. Let's go.
I know you like making feedback. You're going to pin the meters. Do I hear Dick Vaughn in the background?
I think Jesus is kicking out the live jams in heaven, and those are the jams you want to listen to.
Well, it's a very intriguing notion.
Jam.
Universal presents
JamCon 84.
Jam.
Now I understand we have Rex Everything out on the sidewalk in front of the screening cubicle with some filmmaking jammers. Rex, come in, Rex.
I think they're going to start the movie again.
This is Rex Everything here in the screening room at JamCon 84. As you can see, the picture has yet to begin. A crowd is certainly becoming impatient, I know. Certainly this is one of the highlights of this convention, that so many of the people here have flown from parts from all over the world to catch up on and find out about the latest techniques. Of jamming, both ham and otherwise. Well, we go back to you, Crosley. We're still here waiting for the picture to start.
Universal presents
JamCon 84.
Jam is my specialty. Jam is my specialty. I must say, competition's getting mighty scarce.
I expect it is, Emily.
Ladies and gentlemen, that just doesn't cut it in amateur radio.
I just tried to remove some of the strangeness of the result, the explanation. Derives from some of the mathematics of the special theory of relativity and the question of what does simultaneous mean.
Blue Box in Texas, and I wanted to respond to a couple of things. One thing is the fella that was interested in fat receivers, by golly, yes, he should go down and get one. Because if nothing else, you can watch Frank Reynolds preparing to do the news, watch him pick his nose. Also, Max Robinson, you can watch him open a can of V8 and spill it all down the front and get all upset.
So it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, goes, goes.
But I'm trying to get something going.
But what I'm trying to say is that the common sense notions that we develop throughout our whole lifetime experience should not be applied to different kinds of circumstances where we don't have experience. What happens at 50 miles an hour doesn't happen at 186,000 miles a second.
Listeners, if you're interested in reflections on the year 2020, though some of us may not want to look back, on artificial intelligence, on understanding different flavors, or on the secret lives of librarians, we have a librarian here to fill us in on all those topics. So I'm talking with Christiane Gibault, Head of Adult and Reference Services at Troy Public Library, who is going to introduce us to four new books at the library. Christiane, welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we get to the books, you had something you wanted to tell us about.
Yes, summer reading kicks off on Wednesday, June 26th. On July 1st, we're going to be doing what we're calling Library Adventure Begins at Your Library scavenger hunt throughout downtown Troy, so the whole BID section of Troy. And so we have photographs that we've taken of different things, and people are going to have a month and a half to complete it. They can do a sheet and do it all in one day if they want to. It's set to be about a couple hours long, or they can watch our Facebook page for the images that will come out and then go off and look for the images. And they just have to let us know what street or corner they might be on. And so we're going to have a party at the end to see how it went. You know, was it exciting? Was it fun? And we're just trying something a little different to get people outside the library. And we wanted to do it over a longer period of time to account for the hot weather, which we've had recently, and also any rainy days, things like that.
Rainy days. It never rains in Troy.
Really? Rains sometimes.
Okay, so some books to read on one of those rainy days, or maybe even on a nice day. Tell us about them.
Okay. So our first book is called 2020, One City, Seven People, and the Year Everything Changed. Basically, Eric Klinenberg, who is the author of Places for the People and Heat Wave, if people are familiar with that, he's an American sociologist and scholar. And so he's basically done a book on the pandemic by interviewing seven people in New York City and getting their feedback, their impressions, that, what the impact was. So the result of the book, according to Elizabeth Colbert, who is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Sixth Extinction, writes that it's at once intimate and far-ranging, a work that reveals the importance of social solidarity and also its fragility. So it's considered a vivid, multifaceted portrait of a wounded nation. So just a really interesting book, I think, to read. I have read Palaces of the People, which I thought was phenomenal. Palaces, by the way, are libraries. And Heatwave basically was the beginning research for Klinenberg, where he had studied the Chicago heat wave in 95, tried to figure out why some people passed away, some people didn't. Everyone assumed it had to do with low income, and it turns out it had to do with community. If you had a sense of community, people looked out for each other, and that's why some people survived and some didn't. So it's just a very interesting take on our culture.
And the book again is 2020. One City, Seven People, and the Year Everything Changed. Okay, and the next book?
Okay, so I am an NPR listener, and I happened to be listening to The Splendid Table one day when I was driving, and one of the books that they mentioned was The Flavor Thesaurus, More Flavors, which is a plant-led pairings, recipes, and ideas for cooks. And I am not a cook, but I was really fascinated by the idea of, you know, how flavors might work together. So I have a little snippet in the book that I'm just going to read to give a sense of it, and it's about turmeric. And the first part says turmeric and carrot. The flavor of turmeric disappears into carrots. It's like the flavor version of a magic eye picture. You have to disengage your consciousness to detect it. Meanwhile, turmeric and chickpea, a sound partnership in Indian dishes, tangines or pilafs, even if whole chickpeas are notoriously unwilling to absorb flavor. Split chickpeas like chana dal are more impressionable, and turmeric is often simmered with them. And then you can go on to see coconut and turmeric or chickpea and chili. So just a very interesting take on, you know, if you're trying to want to try something new and mixing up flavors, it gives you a real sense of what may or may not go together particularly well, like the carrot and turmeric, but, you know, might, you know, bring out other flavors when you're dealing with chickpeas.
And that's The Flavor Thesaurus, More Flavors, Plant-Led Pairings, Recipes, and Ideas for Cooks. Sounds great. Next.
The next book that I have is called The Secret Lives of Booksellers and Librarians, True Stories of the Magic of Reading.
Are you sure you want to share your secrets with our listeners?
I'm fine with my secrets. So ultimately, James Patterson and Matt Eversman have basically gone out and gotten a compendium of warm recollections from, you know, personal testimonies from people. It's described as an unexpected opportunities that gave each of them a chance to work in a bookstore, well, at least for the people in the stories, gave them a chance to work in a bookstore or possibly work in a library. So some famous people are in there, such as Judy Blume, who was an author and then didn't open her own bookstore until her late 70s, you know, things like that. So you've got those stories, and then you have other people who have gotten into, say, librarianship or bookstores later in life. So, for instance, I, in my mid-40s, decided to go to library school, and when I was there, there were paralegals, there were graphic designers, there were all sorts of people having different careers coming into it, as well as people just coming right out of college, going into their master's degree. So it was a really nice sort of mix and, you know, of people. And so essentially it's about people who are just passionate about reading, you know, as well as connecting with people around reading and books, because everyone has different experiences. Not everyone likes it, but sometimes they just like a certain kind of story or author or something. So everyone can at least have a conversation. So just a wonderful take on that.
And this is James Patterson, who writes all of the adventure stories?
Absolutely, yes, the James Patterson who does that. So I'll have a little snippet from here that I thought I would read. It's from a person by the name of Aaron Duffy. It says, I think back to my early 20s when I worked at a coffee shop in the morning and at Barnes & Noble in the afternoons and evenings. One morning, I'm talking about books with a regular customer when she suggests starting a book exchange right here at the coffee shop. I think it's a great idea, so I buy a little bookcase and the two of us fill it with books. During a break, I pick a random book off the shelf and take a seat at a nearby table. The book in my hands is Tempt Me at Twilight by Lisa Claypass. The cover features a woman in a wedding dress with a flowing skirt. A trashy romance novel, clearly. I've always loved reading. My mother has been reading to me since I was a kid, but this kind of book is what my mother reads, not me. She loves romance novels. Even she says they're trashy. I start scanning the pages to see what the story is about, and I land on a scene where two characters are in the middle of an actual physical fight. They're rolling around on the ground, hitting each other, while another character is making jokes that have me laughing out loud, and I can't stop reading. I don't want to put the book down. Tempt Me at Twilight becomes the book that starts my official journey into romance.
So there we have two different book reviews. That excerpt was from the book The Secret Lives of Booksellers and Librarians, True Stories of the Magic of Reading. Okay, and the next one?
The next one we have is called Unmasking AI, My Mission to Protect What is Human in a World of Machines by Joy Boulwamini. Essentially, she's a computer scientist who chronicles the journey from eager graduate student to crusader against algorithmic bias. So in her research and what she was trying to study, she realized that AI could not read her facial, not even just her expressions, just not read her, because everything was designed for white men, because most of the scientists were white men. I know that there are some people out there that have tried to wash their hands, you know, at the airports, and it doesn't read darker skin, it only reads lighter skin, so the water doesn't turn on, things like that. So all of those scientific things that we have experienced, she obviously experienced. So she's trying to work towards a less biased environment with her scientific research. So just a very interesting take on AI. Basically, it's a timely call to action about the near and present dangers of AI systems, because if they can't really read everything, then there might be some issues out there. So I haven't read it yet, but it sounded like a really interesting purchase. And so now that it's come in, it's definitely going to be on my list of things to read.
So listeners, it may not be available if you come right into the library. And again, that was Christiane Gibeau, Head of Adult and Reference Services at Troy Public Library, telling us about 2020, One City, Seven People, and the Year Everything Changed, The Flavor Thesaurus, More Flavors, Secret Lives of Booksellers and Librarians, and Unmasking AI. Christiane, thanks for talking with me, Bria Barthel, for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much for your time, Bria.
If you are a young person, or if you like to read to young people, listen up, because Carol Roberts, Head of Young People Services at Troy Public Library, is here with a few cool book recommendations for July reading. Carol, welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hi, Bria. Thank you. Good to see you.
And so you've got some really cool books here. Start us off.
Well, the first one I want to talk about is called Goodbye, A First Conversation About Grief by Madison, Raleigh, and Roxas. This is a book that introduces young children to the concept of grief, and it's also for parents. And I feel like every parent of young children should have a copy. It's just something that all parents have to deal with at some point, and this is a wonderful introduction to that. First of all, this is very colorful. It's a picture book, but in the back, it also has information for parents and reminders that there is no right or wrong way or to remind children that there is no right or wrong way to feel grief. And it also has suggestions on how to talk with children about death, and it's also emphasizes the importance of including children in conversations.
I'm so glad that there are these books. I have a friend whose brother died when she was young, and the parents just never mentioned it to her. They just never talked about it. It's like, oh yeah, he died. So it's so nice to know that there are books and resources to help both the parents and the children understand and deal with their grief.
Well, the concept, of course, is so important, and in especially, you know, in the beginning, because children are naturally curious. But it's also, you know, some of the basic questions can catch you off guard the first time it happens. And this book is wonderful. I think if more parents had something like this ahead of time, that would make those conversations so much easier. For example, it starts off by saying, "Life is beginning all the time. Seeds sprout, eggs hatch, and babies are born. They are all alive just like you." And it starts off showing examples. There's diverse characters, which I always like to see. And there's also, you know, different age groups. But it also mentions that everything that lives eventually dies. And we don't know for sure when it will happen, but we do know that many living things die when they get old or if they get very ill. And it goes on from there. What a wonderful way to help children process their feelings. They're suggested points for discussion, such as, and children will ask you, you know, well, so what is grief? What does it look like? You know, what happens when we die? And the suggestions on how to talk with children about death are extremely helpful. And they're also reminders for parents that what they're doing, it's an ongoing conversation. And that's, I think, really important to remember. And this is also part of a series on concepts for young children. There's a version of this about race. There's one about gender, about consent, and about bodies.
And it's a board book. What is the age or reading level, would you say?
This, I'd say, was for ages 3 to 7. And I just feel like it's a must-have if you're a parent.
And so that's Goodbye by
Megan Madison, Jessica Raleigh, and Isabel Roxas.
Great. And the second book?
The second book I have is called Evergreen, and this is also a picture book. This is by Matthew Cordell, and he is a Caldecott medalist, which means that he's already won an award, which is the highest award given by the American Library Association for illustration. And if you see the illustration on the cover of this book, this is a story about a squirrel who learns to deal with her fears. It's pen and ink and watercolor, and there's something very Sendakian about this. I look at this and you say, why does this look familiar? And it's very reminiscent of Maurice Sendak's work, who, of course, was the author of Where the Wild Things Are. This is a story of a squirrel who's quite timid. And this is really, it's set up like a baby chapter book. Even though it's a picture book, each of her encounters, Evergreen, the squirrel, each of her encounters are treated like a separate chapter. So it's divided into parts, according to what takes place in each adventure. So she has to deliver soup to an ailing grandmother, but she's going to have to walk out in the forest for the first time by herself, and she's terrified. And so slowly, carefully, she discovers that perhaps it's not so horrible after all, and she becomes confident. And by the end of the book, she's dealt with her fears, and so it's just a very engaging book, and it's great for anybody or any child, I would say, who's a young child who's maybe dealing with anxiety.
That's great. And that title again is Evergreen. And your third book?
My third book is actually two books, And every year we do something called Read It Forward, which is basically it's for teens. And the last couple of years we've had two books for them to choose from. And we've done the same thing this year. The first book is called A Lazzo, and it's by Darcy Little Badger. And this is about a girl who can raise the ghosts of dead animals, a skill passed down through generations of her Lipan Apache family. Her beloved cousin has just been murdered in a town that wants no prying eyes, but she is going to do more than pry. The picture-perfect facade of Willoughby masks gruesome secrets, and she will rely on her wits, skills, and friends to tear off the mask and protect her family.
And the cover of the book says it's one of Time's best 100 fantasy books of all time.
Yes. This was chosen by a panel of librarians, local librarians, and so we do this every year. And so that's the first book. The second book, however, is a graphic novel, and it's called Hollow, and it's by Shannon Waters. And this is about Isabel Izzy Crane and her family, who just moved to the infamous Sleepy Hollow, but is a slick skeptic from the city. She's too busy adjusting to the change of scenery for ghost stories. They're not real, after all. Then she meets Vicky Van Tassel. Yes, that Van Tassel. And the lovable prankster, Crack Brian. Vicky's weariness with the legend turns to terror when the horseman himself shows up along with a curse set on destroying the Van Tassel line. Now they have only until Halloween night to break the curse.
This sounds like something people should read in October.
Well, I'm always up for a good ghost story.
Great. And then you have one more?
I do have one last book for children, and this is called Something Like Home, and this is by Andrea Beatrice Aranjo, and this is for, I would say, ages 10 to 14, so middle schoolish. This is a novel told in verse, and it's about an 11-year-old who calls 911 on her parents because she fears that they've overdosed on drugs. And so the result of that is that she ends up living with her aunt, whom she really doesn't know, and she struggles. Though yet it's a positive tale about persevering through the unknown and finding hope. I think this is a story that would be highly relatable for children who are in or heading to foster care. And this book is an honor book, was nominated for the Pura Belpri Award, which is an award given yearly for Latino or Latina authors portraying the Latin cultural experience. So whoever receives the award, their work is considered to be the best portrayal of that experience. So again, I think this would be really an important book for kids that are struggling in foster care.
Thank you. And that was Carol Roberts, Head of Young People Services at Troy Public Library's main branch at 100 2nd Street in Troy. The website is
thetroylibrary.org.
And yes, start it with the word the, or you get to a whole different state. Those books again are Goodbye, A Lazzo, Hollow, and Something Like Home. Oh, and Evergreen. Thank you so much, Carol. Talking with me, Bria Barthel, for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bria.
That's 2022 new music from Aaron Embarki. The album is called Shebang, and that's track number 3 on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your home for all sorts of new music.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Some folks need killing. We have wicked people doing wicked things, torturing and murdering and raping. It's time to call out those guys in green and go have them handled. Or those boys in blue.
During a church service, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, the Republican nominee for governor, called for the extrajudicial killing of those he describes as the enemies of Christian America. In spite of a history of controversial statements about gays, feminists, and others, Robinson won the GOP primary after former President Donald Trump praised him as Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids. Trump's campaign has announced that the Republican platform will take moderate positions on abortion and same-sex marriage. Although the former president regularly takes credit for naming the Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe, Trump has also claimed the middle ground on abortion, as he did in April.
I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections.
Amid concerns of President Joe Biden's fitness, Illinois Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley says Biden should secure his legacy and help the party unite by leaving the race.
The only thing that you can do now to cement that for all time and prevent utter catastrophe is to step down and let someone else do this.
Like many Democratic office holders, Illinois State Representative LaShawn Ford says Biden is risking a crucial election.
The ball is in President Biden's court to calm the Democrats and show them a path forward. I think that's where he's failing it.
For his part, Biden took a defiant tone on MSNBC and in a letter to congressional Democrats. The president says he was chosen by voters in the primaries and says rivals should challenge him at the convention. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre also fought off questions from reporters regarding the president's health on Monday's press briefing.
The president has seen a neurologist for his physical 3 times. And it is in the reporting that we share a comprehensive reporting. Matter of fact, it's more than what the last guy shared.
Closing arguments began Monday in Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez's federal corruption trial after nearly 2 months of testimony. Menendez spoke to the Senate floor in January, insisting he's not guilty.
To keep the sensational story in the press, it poisons the jury pool, and it seeks to convict me in the court of public opinion. The sensationalized allegations are now creating a rising call for my resignation, despite my innocence.
Closing arguments could last through most of Tuesday, and if convicted, Menendez could face decades in prison. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. This week, we're looking at the reasons why people don't vote. Research shows that when citizens don't follow the daily news or when their family and friends don't vote, citizens are less likely to vote. A 2020 Ipsos NPR survey shows a suspicion of news media among non-voters, 80% of whom agree with the statement, "The mainstream media are more interested in making money than telling the truth." Non-voters watch less television, see less news on mobile devices and computers, and are less likely to follow campaigns. Only a third watched part of a political convention, and 2/3 didn't watch a debate. Another factor, family and friends. Only 5% of non-voters say they do discuss politics with family members. 41% never discuss politics with their family. 53% say they never discuss politics with friends. But there is more and more evidence that influence of family members and friends can encourage non-voters to register and vote, particularly among younger voters. A 2016 New York Times article interviewed Henry Brady, dean of the Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. He said, "Voting behavior is very much a habit. If you've had the behavior modeled in your home by your parents consistently voting, by political discussion, sometimes by participation, you start a habit formation, and then when you become a little older, you'll feel it's your duty and responsibility to register and vote." Links to articles and the surveys can be found at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we'll hear from Sun Watchers, and this song is Beautiful Crystals.